sitting here at the Hotel St. Michaels. We just had our breakfast. Me and Ted Leonard of Prescott Pro Sound. He is what can only be described as a character here in Prescott, Arizona. He runs Prescott Pro Sound, which is a very high-end sound and video company that handles most, if not all, the larger events here in Prescott, Arizona, and the surrounding Quad City area. The Courthouse Square here is a very picturesque tourist destination. And they have concert series and different things throughout the year. And Ted and his company and all his cohorts run the soundboards, make sure everything's up to par. They just did a few days back, the boot drop, which is our version of the Times Square dropping of the ball on New Year's Eve. And, I don't know, a few thousand folks out here. I didn't come out. It was really cold that night. A little snow. And it happens too late. Like 9 o'clock's my bedtime. So I wasn't out here, but it looked like a great time. We'll talk to Ted about that. He also handles sound for like I said, most big events out this way. The Battle of the Bands that takes place in Prescott Valley. The Prescott Valley, formerly Tim's Toyota Center. The big arena over there, he handles all that. The municipalities that use his company to set up, monitor, and to maintain their sound equipment in the city halls and stuff around here. He's the man. He's the guy that takes care of the sound here in northern Arizona. He's outside having a smoke right now before we get started. And I just finished using a restroom at the beautiful Bistro St. Michael's coffee shop and restaurant at the St. Michael Hotel on Prescott's famed Whiskey Row. It's a neat building right on the corner of Montezuma and Gurley Street. We're sitting in the window. It's odd, though. There's a bunch of shops and stuff right near the lobby, some salons, a hat shop, some art galleries and things. And they share a common entryway. And you need a coin, a specially designed little token to get in the restroom. And here comes Ted. He's back.
Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm good. We're like the worst security-conscious folks. Your wallet was left sitting wide open.
Oh,
I left camera gear. And
that is so funny.
And my wallet and all kind of good stuff. Oh, and the bill just came.
Yeah, it did.
Minus lunch.
Okay,
breakfast.
So now watch how an ADD guy does math. It's really interesting. Can you help me with this? Oh, so if I take... put in the total and you can figure out the rest? Oh, that would make it so much easier. You know what I mean? So, and that takes care of that. You see what I'm saying?
What's your name, Haley?
Yes.
Haley was our server.
Oh, Haley's the best.
I run I do a broadcast radio show in town for one of the stations, but I also do a podcast. That's what I'm doing here. So that's why we're here, because Ted's a celebrity. He's a legend,
yeah.
Legend in his own mind.
Not even. I call it a big fish in a puddle. Haley, thank you very, very much. Is this your pen?
Yes.
Can I steal it?
No.
Okay. I didn't think so.
Who's Mr. Takamoto? That's what's on your card.
Well, you know, I found it in the subway in New York the other day. You know what I mean? They were doing a raid, and I got that guy's card. He was awfully nice. So,
right.
How are you, man?
I'm good. Now, we just had a great breakfast. Thanks for breakfast, Teddy.
Hey, my pleasure.
I feel odd here because I'm not a sound guy by no means. As you know, my background is journalism, photography primarily. And here I am sitting with the man, the myth, the legend, Ted Leonard, who is the sound guru for these parts.
Oh, goodness.
It's a lot like inviting over Wolfgang Puck or Bobby Flay to your house and then serving them a bowl of cornflakes.
That would be very, very difficult, wouldn't it?
So this should be the best sounding and produced interview that I've done, because when we're done here, you're going to show me how to actually work this recorder we're doing.
Yeah, it's a piece of cake. It's got a lot of buttons on it.
I've got a nice little recorder. I've got some cords, and then I've got... $10 microphones.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
We got to kind of eat them is what I found out.
Oh, got it.
You turn your head like this,
it's gone.
So you got to be right.
Do you know what they call that, Matt?
I cheap.
They call it the proximity effect. So, with microphones, it's all about the
proximity for a podcast.
Proximity effect.
We're on the proximity effect with Ted Leonard today.
That's exactly right.
And then I'd have to buy another $1.99 GoDaddy domain. I ain't doing that.
You could call your show the proximity effect. That would be awesome name, man. I'm telling you.
Let's get right into it. We're right here looking out the window on Prescott's Courthouse Square.
That's right.
It's a beautiful, beautiful spot, picturesque. It's the it's a tourist destination for folks. You can walk them down the Whiskey Row here and bump into folks from Japan, Germany,
oh, yeah.
and all over the Southwest.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, you run Prescott Pro Sound LLC.
Right.
Give us a quick description. What is Prescott Pro Sound?
What we've done is we are a live sound company. And what we do is we provide sound reinforcement for anything, whether it's rock and roll bands, jazz bands, corporate events. We do a lot of corporate events, which a lot of people don't know about that side of the business.
So you're running that big 4-foot board that got all those knobs and dials on.
Right.
Confess to me, because I've joked around with you at events that I'm going to throw this knob, turn that button, all that stuff. You got how many knobs, how many controls on the boards you run?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Dozens and dozens and dozens.
So anyway, basically what it is. Okay.
I turn one of those knobs, does it make a difference?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I don't buy it.
Every knob makes a difference, Matt. You know that. It's like, okay, let me ask you this question, Matt. On your camera. And by the way, you're a very good photographer. Unbelievable. On your camera. Does every button mean anything, or can I just turn
just
the button?
Turn them. No,
it doesn't make any difference at all.
I use that P, the green P mode.
Oh, program.
We call that professional. That's what the professionals do. That's the professional mode. Is what.
Oh, God.
No, you look at that board, and
I am a 58-year-old sound engineer. And when I started on analog. And my trade magazine...
Cutting tape with Scotch tape and X-Acto knives?
And my trade magazine is called Front of House Magazine. That's what we as sound guys, read. And the big joke is, when you grow up in analog, and you convert to digital, which is the board you see, I mean, you beat your head against a wall trying to learn these things. Yeah. Now, the other way to do it, instead of reading the manual, is calling a 10-year-old, and they'll teach you how to do it. And they know how to do it because it's in their blood system.
I got a 5-year-old at home. He teaches me how to use my phone.
That is exactly right.
And run my DVD player.
That is exactly right.
So how long have you been doing sound?
15 years.
15 years here?
Here.
And what were you doing before that?
Okay, so the history of it is, when I was 13 years old, Cousin George wrote a rock opera. And he needed a drummer.
How old was Cousin George?
Cousin George is 9 years older than me.
Oh, okay.
So that's 22. So when I'm 13 years old, I learned how to play drums. And then we put together this rock opera. It took 2 years. And he wrote the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the thing had some great success. So we were opening for bands like Aerosmith.
At 13, 15 years old?
No, I was now, let's see, 13, about 16 at that point in the game.
And where was this?
This was mostly in Boston and New York. And we opened for Styx in New York City and this and that. Matter of fact, we had 3 record labels down in New York City watching us. It was us, it was Styx, and it was another band, I can't remember who. And it was right at the turn of rock and roll to disco. Right at that very turn.
76, 77-ish?
Yeah. And what happened was we were going to get signed by, I can't remember who, because George handled all that stuff. And what happened was Styx got signed that night, and they're one of the last rock bands that got signed pre-disco. Fabulous band. And we never got signed because it was a little too late and disco took over. I mean, disco changed everything. It changed music. It changed dancing. It changed clothing.
Fashion, yeah.
Everything, okay? It was really probably the biggest change we've seen since the Beatles. And that's how powerful that was. So all these record labels, of course, they got out of the live rock business and went into disco. Probably rightfully so. So
make a buck.
Consequently, we ended up ending the rock opera.
What was, do you remember the name of the rock opera?
It was called the Bozo Rock Opera.
The Bozo Rock Opera.
And what it was about, it was about this guy. Well, anyway, it was a big controversy. We got into, it was first all about the survival of fittest. So if you see the stage in the opening act, is there's all this haze and smoke on the stage. And anyway, this loud music's going, you know, sort of like crazy stuff. And this bunny comes out. And then over on stage left, the gorilla comes out and kills the bunny. And it's all about survival of the fittest. So we got into issues like the Pope and the anti-abortion thing. And we got into politics. And we got into all sorts of school education problems that are going on. But the basic concept of the thing was this child is born. And he goes through the whole school system. Just numb, completely numb, as Pink Floyd has mentioned, yeah. And he turns into what we called a bozo. My mind goes slow. And so now at the very, so we go through the whole education thing, then we went through religion, we went through the survival of the fittest thing, we went in government programming, and at the end of the rock opera, how it ended was you had religion versus science. And in the middle of that, we had, on the religion, we had a pope with a cross. And on the science, we had a mad scientist. In the middle, we had a robot. And the robot blew up right at the end of the, and that was the end of the rock opera. But it had tremendous success.
Now, you're a 16-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Traveling with some of the biggest names.
Yeah.
Up and down the Eastern Seaboard. What would that blow your mind?
Because I wasn't conscious. I had no idea what I was doing.
When you were sitting there?
Not a clue. I mean, you know, in those days, you know, you're sitting in back with Sha-na-na and Lenny, the sax player for Sha-na-na. Yeah. He was like a regular fan of us. He'd come down and hang out and watch our rock opera constantly. Joe Perry and Steve Tyler would sit up in the lighting control room at Katie's in Boston and watch the show. They loved it. And then Johanna Wilde. I mean, it was crazy. The boys from Boston.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't even a band yet, and they were coming to see us. So it was a wild ride, and mostly in Boston.
What was the biggest venue you played?
Oh God, I don't remember, Matt. I really don't. I mean, when I tell you it's like a flash.
Yeah.
I just don't remember.
How long
did
that last?
Well, about 6-7 years, something like that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, but it was like, I wish I was conscious. Cause it was, and the funny thing is I think I started when I was in eighth grade. And for some reason, my parents supported it, okay, because they loved the music. And so I'm going to school and playing till 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was just, so I barely remember school.
Touch on that. What was home life like? What did your dad do? What did your folks do?
Well, dad had a car dealership that he started with his brother in 1955. And he had 22 lines of European.
In Boston?
No, it was actually in Massachusetts, right on the border of Rhode Island.
Okay.
Because we are from Rhode Island.
And you still got family in Rhode Island, right?
A little bit left, yeah. There's some of them.
You were just there recently?
Yes, I was there for Christmas, yeah. But mom and dad are gone. They're in the next life. And my sister is in Rhode Island. One of my sisters is in Rhode Island. The other sister's in Key West. My cousin's in Rhode Island. So it was a great trip back. We all convened. The family's getting small, Matt.
Yeah.
It happens.
Mine is too, but it's mainly because they don't like talking to me.
I can understand.
They all have caller ID, so I don't talk to them much. Every time I dial in, it goes straight to voicemail.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. You know what I mean? That's why you have caller IDs.
So growing up, dad owns a car dealership. Yeah. And what's mom doing?
Mom is working at the car dealership.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Family business. You ever worked there?
Oh, yeah. See, that's okay. Now we go into post-rock. And I remember when the band broke up, right? That was in 1977. I went to work for a company called India Imports, which is the head store for Pier 1 Imports.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so India Imports had this four-story warehouse in Providence, Rhode Island. And a friend of mine got me a job there. And so we were working there, and what we do is we pack shirts into boxes. And I'd say maybe a good day, 2% of the orders were accurate. Because
were you supplementing your own wardrobe, or you just didn't know how to count?
Both. Both. But what happened was everybody that worked there was a musician. And they liked to smoke those things. They weren't cigarettes. And they had this thing every day called High Noon. And we go up on the roof, and do our thing. And so consequently, a lot of the orders were not right. And I remember a guy named Rudy Cheeks. He was a very brilliant guy, performer. And he started this thing on the wall, dead famous people. And so this whole group of people started doing this adding to this wall of dead famous people. So it was a lot of fun. And then at the end of 1977, my father asked me if I would be interested in working at the dealership. And so somewhere, I think it was September of 77, I went to work with my father. And he's the kind of guy that puts you through everything. You know, you start sweeping the floors and cleaning cars and things like that. Did that for 23 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Now, when the band broke up, mm-hmm. What was the name of the band again?
It was called the Bozo Rock Opera.
The Bozo. Okay, so the name of the band was also the name of the rock opera.
Yeah, it was an off-Broadway show. It was a full production.
Man. So how was the breakup? Was it what's the behind the music documentaries where things fall apart, or was it just a matter of there was no more market for that?
There's just no more market, and we all decided that this is it. We're done.
What did George end up doing?
Well, George went to New York City, and he started a show on cable TV called Commander Video, and it had some success, and it was really funny because his slot time followed a pornography show.
I know I know what show you're talking about. That's infamous, famous, whatever the Midnight Blue or something.
I think
that's like
something
that.
Like that. There was a pornography
on broadcast TV.
And so his show followed. It was Commander Video, and he did that for a couple of years. But George has been doing music all his life. Yeah. George opened up for the Rolling Stones in 1964. And I remember the Rolling Stones came to the theater in Providence, Rhode Island, and they weren't known yet, okay? And I was a very young guy, and I remember leaving the theater, and all the Rolling Stones guys were out in front of the theater tipping over a taxi cab. He rolled it right on his roof. I mean, these guys, they were crazy. Yeah. They were crazy from the word go.
Well, do you remember your first concert you ever went to?
No.
No?
Are you kidding me?
Do you remember last week?
No. Well, wait a minute. Last week, yes, I do. The Prescott boot drop at 12 degrees and snow. Yeah, that was great.
So when you were growing up as a kid, little Teddy Leonard running around the streets of Rhode Island, what were you listening to? Was it rock and roll?
Rock and roll. Yeah. All rock and roll. The first song I learned how to play on drums was Money Money.
Yeah.
Money Money. Yeah. And now, if you walk down Whiskey Row on a Friday night, you'll hear every single club, the band in the club playing Money Money, still 50 years later or whatever, 48, 45 years later.
Are you still drumming?
You know, Matt, I don't.
Not at all.
Drumming 3 years ago because the sound business is so lucrative.
Yeah.
Now, here's what happened. If you take a look at the transition from being, when I first came here, I started playing in bands. And the last band I played in was Instant Replay with Epi Vicente. He's phenomenal. And it was great 80s rock and roll band. But then what happened was I started dabbling in sound over here in Prescott. And so we would go do a gig with Instant Replay. I would set up all the sound. That takes about 2.5-3 hours. Set up the drums. Play 4 sets of music. Tear down everything and get paid $100. Mm-hmm. And then somebody one day called me up and says, Ted, can I rent your drums? And I said, yeah. He says, how much would it cost? I says, it's $200. Is the market? Is that okay with you? He says, that's fine. So it takes me 15 minutes to set up the drums, 15 minutes to tear them down. That's a half an hour total for $200 versus 10 hours for $100. So, you know, what are you going to do? You just can't make any money.
You are good at math.
We're getting there.
That's better.
So what happened is I said, you know, I can't make a living playing music in Prescott. It's just not going to happen. And I found out that most of the guys that are playing music, of course, have other jobs.
Yeah.
So we started the sound thing, and it's been a very, very lucky. I'm very, very lucky. Things have been going really good.
So what, other than tipping over a cab, watching the Stones tip over a cab, any other anecdotes, any other band-related stories that are suitable for broadcast?
Hardly that I remember. We did, I don't know if I should say this on the podcast, but it was a time.
Nobody listens to this.
Yeah, nobody listens to this. It was a time where, you know, drugs were big. And they had some good stuff back then because it was pretty pure. And so that's probably why we don't remember a lot of stuff. But we had agents and we were doing albums and.
Yeah.
you know, it was just it was just a big haze to me, you know, because don't forget, I wasn't sleeping very much. I did school and then I did, yeah. You know, come on, man. How much can you possibly do and then remember it at the end of the day? You're running 20 hours a day.
Yeah. So Rock and Roll Ted, what's your, man, nobody listens to this, remember?
No, nobody listens to
this. What's your guilty pleasure, music-wise?
What do you mean?
What's something that you love listening to that if anybody knew, they would be shocked?
Oh, nothing really. I mean,
Rock and roll to the core?
It's just, you know, I was brought up with Led Zeppelin. I was brought up with Pink Floyd.
I had
you know, those kind of guys.
For a secret closeted Livin' La Vida Loca listener.
No
Ricky Martin in there?
No. I got to tell you, though, Ricky Martin's, he's amazing. You know, here's one for you. That guy named Usher is phenomenal. Now, the question, I think when you're a musician, you listen to music differently than when you're not a musician. And I don't mean...
Than a fan.
And that's not a criticism. It's just a reality. And so when I listen to music, it's not so much that I'm listening to music as a whole. It's I'm listening to the parts.
Yeah.
And Usher is amazing. If you listen to his recordings and productions and all that sort of stuff, and I'm saying to myself, my God, I would love to be in a studio session with him just to find out how they're getting these sounds.
Yeah.
It's, you know, because that's all science. So, but Niels Lofgren, Jimi Hendrix, Frank Zappa, Moody Blues, Electric Light Orchestra was phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, so just all the pop stuff, I guess, is what I listened to. Otherwise, I didn't have time.
Yeah.
Do you know the rehearsal time that we spent putting this rock opera together? Okay, Cousin George is the kind of guy that he's going to put this package together and it's going to be polished.
Yeah.
Okay, so what does that mean? Rehearsal every day. So you've got school up until, I don't know, 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, whatever. Then you go to rehearsal and then you go do gigs. So when do you have time to listen to music?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the story on that deal.
So what? Go to the dealership. You said, what, 20, 23
23 years?
What were you doing? Started sweeping floors and washing cars?
And changing tires.
And Dad
did the right thing.
How'd you end it? How'd you end the 23 years?
I'll go through the real quick.
Teddy Leonard in a suit and tie?
Oh, big time, yeah. So it started out with, you know, washing cars, changing tires, learning how to pinstripe cars, that kind of thing. And then I advanced into the parts department, and I learned everything about the parts department. Then I advanced into the service department. I learned how to repair cars. Can you believe this? And so I'm ripping apart engines and rebuilding blocks and things like that. And then I got into the warranty department. From there, I got into sales. From there, I went into sales manager, from there, general manager, and from there, I kind of ran it along with my mother, who was just brilliant, and ended up with 4 executive committees with Volvo Cars in North America, and also on their...
Did you say Volvo?
Yeah, we had a Volvo franchise. Well, we had Volvo, we had Triumph, we had MG, we had tons of cars, but they all went out of business, like Austin Healey. And
you were dealing with the higher end.
Yeah, Sunbeam Tigers and those kind of cars. And
what'd you drive? What was Teddy's personal car?
What I drove and that I love is I drove a lot of MGs and a lot of Triumphs. And I still to this day have a Triumph TR6 1976.
Sweet.
Last year they made them.
Nice.
I love it. And so then what happened is I ended up getting involved very heavily with the Volvo factory. So I was on 4 executive committees with them, and then I was on the National Committee for Volvo Finance North America for a couple of years. And that's where I learned everything. I learned so much from these guys. And that's what happened. And then what happened is, you know, some personal issues got in the way. I don't know if I should go into that whole part, but I ended up in Prescott. You know what Prescott is? Prescott is the recovery capital of the United States of America. And so got my act back together again after a...
So those days of hazy 16-year-old Teddy are long behind you?
Yeah. 13 years.
Sharp as a tack?
Yeah, 13 years without any mind-altering substances other than nicotine and caffeine.
And butter.
And butter is huge.
We learned that at breakfast.
We love butter. But I'll tell you, now, we'll go into the sound company if you want, and our philosophy of that.
We got no structure here.
Yeah.
And do whatever you want.
And that sound company. Can I interview you?
No.
How'd you get into photography, Matt?
I don't remember. I was drumming in a band, and they didn't have a photographer. No.
And then what happened is my father had a car dealership.
No, my dad was a car thief.
Was he really a car thief? Was he any good?
No.
We met... That's like meeting Vinny Boombots from New York City.
Flip side, your dad was a car salesman. My dad was a tractor salesman.
No way.
He worked for a Caterpillar tractor in a shipping depot in California for 39 years.
Did he have a good sense of humor? He must have.
He was a goof. He was silly. My son gets that from him. Never met him. My dad passed years ago, but my son is he's a Santos true and true, man.
Nice.
I must have skipped a generation because, as you know, I'm a very serious guy.
Yes, you're very serious, especially when you're doing photographs of sundogs. I can see the seriousness of Matt Santos, ladies and gentlemen.
I only take photo jobs so I can get close to Teddy. I'm Teddy's personal stalker.
Yes, you are.
Paparazzi.
Every second of it, Matt.
Every time I'm at an event you're at, I got to make sure I get my Teddy picture.
Matt is the man, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's go back. Okay, when you were selling cars, not when you hit the management, not when you were on these committees with Volvo. When you were selling cars, what was your pitch? What was your pitch? Give me your sales.
You know something, Matt?
Make me buy an MG. I need two, one for each foot.
Let me tell you what happened. I'm not a salesman. I turned into one, but I went to Dale Carnegie. I had no idea how to do this stuff. I'm a rock and roll guy that does drugs, you know? Hey, can I introduce you in a car? Do you have any pot? Hey, wait a minute. Maybe we should go out to the back lot and soften up a little bit. What do you think? Yeah.
Again, public service announcement. Those days are long behind.
Yes, they are. But that, you know, it was, I didn't know it at the time, but I never enjoyed that whole ride, but I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
So you know how kids are with their family. What do you have to do to be accepted, kind of a thing, yeah. You know? And so you fall into that whole trap. The next thing you know, you're doing what they want you to do, but you're dying a day at a time.
Yeah.
So I think the
funniest... Very slow suicide.
Yeah. And I think the funniest thing is when I came out here, we had to make a decision of what to do with the dealership. And in the meantime, my dad had a stroke. Mm. So he wasn't working at all. He had retired prior to that stroke. But anyway, the family had a little heart-to-heart talk, and we said, you know, what are we doing? Are you coming back, Ted? And I said, you know what? I got to be honest. I said, I've never liked the car business. I can't go back to this car business. And they said, well, what do you think we should do? I said, I think we should sell it. And so it turned out that everybody in the family that was working there, my mother, my two sisters, and myself, we all hated it. So we decided that maybe we should sell the business. And so anyway, my mother says, well, who's going to tell your father? And I said, I'll tell him. And so I said, Dad, here's the deal. I said, nobody's happy. And I says, you know, all we were doing is trying to keep my father's dream alive. That's all. And so...
More tradition than passion.
Yeah, exactly. And so I said, Dad, here's the deal. I said, we had a little discussion, you know, and this and that. And we think we probably should sell this dealership. And my father says, oh, Teddy, what took you so long? So, yeah, he thinks we're helping him.
I've been trying to sell cars to get rid of inventory so I can go to Boca.
That's right. So he thinks that, you know, he's doing us a favor by having a job. We're doing him a favor keeping the dream alive, and nobody's talking about it. So finally that's what happened. We sold it.
And you never went back? You stayed in Prescott?
Stayed in Prescott.
And what'd you do then? What'd you do in Prescott? What was your first gigs?
Well, the first gig, you were talking earlier about Danny Romero.
Yeah.
I ended up playing with Danny Romero for a year or so. Yeah.
Drumming?
Yeah. Sky Daddy would sit in, and we had a blast. Danny Romero's, he's the best. Yeah. I love the guy. So then that ended and joined another band called Cash Daily, joined another band, I can't remember the name, then ultimately with Instant Replay.
And that was your main gig, was music? Did you have a straight job too?
Nope, just music. Well, after I got out of rehab, I worked at Albertsons, and I got to tell you something about working at Albertsons.
Were you here in Prescott?
Yes. I was pretty good. I mean, I knew like how to actually bag groceries because I had 8 hours of training on the eggs go on top of the watermelon. I really didn't, 8 hours, Matt, of training to find out you put the eggs on top of the watermelon, not the other way around. And so I became very good at bagging. And then they made me a checker after 4 weeks, so I was checking bananas. The code for bananas, by the way, excuse me, the code for bananas is 4011. So if you got... Okay, so... If you want to go into... buy bananas, you can go ahead and tell the cashier that the code is 4011. Otherwise, you can't check those damn things out. You know what I'm saying? If you don't know that code. And then some lady comes up and she comes up with this vegetable. I'm from the East Coast. I don't know about this. She comes up with a jalapeno. So I had made some cheat notes, right? So I could get these codes down. And I'm looking for jalapenos. I think it starts with an H. It starts with a J. I couldn't find the code. The poor lady, she's there for like 7 minutes. I can't find this damn code to check her out. It's like, you can't buy them unless I have the code. It's a jalapeno. It begins with a J. Who would have known? I'm from the East Coast. Steak and potatoes, dude. You know what I mean? That's the way we roll. So anyway, I got the jalapeno code. I've forgotten it now because it's been a while. But anyway, after
Albertson's. We'll head over to Albertson's when we're done here.
Go check the codes. And, well, now they put little stickies on the fruit and vegetables so everybody can
switch them around. That way, when they run it through the bar scanner, you get charged for a jalapeno when you're buying a watermelon.
I'll tell you what you do.
These watermelons are 3 cents.
You got to change that. Asparagus is so expensive. So you put a banana coat on the asparagus. You're good to go. So it was great.
These bananas are green.
We had so much fun at Albertson's. I mean, what a great group of people. Yeah. So anyway, I did that for like 8 months. And then I said, I can't do this anymore. This is killing me. And that's when I got into the band thing. So then I had to make some money. So that's how it evolved into sound. And I met this guy. His name is Brent Reason. And Brent and I got together. And we said, you know what? If we want to do this, let's get a little bit serious about it. I said, okay. So we started formulating a little bit of a plan. Not much, but a little bit. And we bought some equipment and this and that. And the next thing you know, here we are.
What? How would you describe the music scene in Yavapai County, Prescott specifically?
Boy, I'll tell you what, in my opinion, it's booming now. But what does that mean? That's a relative statement, right? If you check out the music scene in Rhode Island, dead.
Yeah.
So what's happening, what I see happening, bands can't make any money. I think that the DUI laws are such that it's keeping down some attendance at the bars. I think
on Whiskey Row.
And I think that when the Birdcage would pay X amount of dollars, because that's gone down because people are not drinking as much because of fear of a DUI, which is all good. You know, it is what it is. And I see a decrease in the 15 years that I've been here of the traffic on Whiskey Row. I see a substantial decrease. So I think that bands, although there's a ton of bands in Prescott, and there's a lot of talent here, especially that doesn't even come out, that I've had an opportunity to meet. And one of the talents that was here was Chris Clark. Now, I don't know if people know who Chris Clark is, but she worked for Motown for over 30 years with Barry Gordy. Hmm. And I was doing a jazz gig at a club with a gentleman named Jim Glass, with the Jim Glass Blues Band, but it was actually a jazz gig. But Chris Clark walked in with another friend of hers, and she is stunning. She's 6'2", unbelievable presence. And somebody convinced her to come up and sing a blues song with us. And Matt, I got to tell you this, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So I started hanging out with Chris a little bit, all right? And it turns out that she's got several albums that she's done in the 60s with Motown, Barry Gordy. And she was a heavy influence in Motown. Mm. So now, as of today, it turns out that her albums in Europe have some kind of resurgence happening. And she's like almost like number one over in Europe in touring. So, yeah. So those kind of hidden talents. And it goes on and on. I mean, never mind the fact that Tony Tennille is here.
Yeah.
I mean, my God. So there's a lot of hidden talent here, and why are they here? Is it the same reason I'm here?
What I found in my years, I've been here 10 years, worked with local media, print, and some broadcast for seven, 8 years while I was here. And just meeting folks, what surprised me is not, well, music especially, because I was blown away at the music scene here, up and down the row and the different festivals and stuff, but just the talent in general. It's a retirement community. We're a mile up in the mountains, had some nice snow last week. It's a beautiful area, but people come here to get away from Southern Cal, from San Francisco, from Chicago, from New York, from Rhode Island, you know, all the different metro areas, and from Phoenix. But you walk down the street, you find a novelist who's, you know, that you've known, you know, famous folks, writers, producers, scientists. The science community here is huge.
Enormous.
And just the amount of folks that are here that if you start, you know, Googling a name or two here and there, I had no idea that was the guy sitting at the other end of the coffee shop.
That's exactly right.
It's a very eclectic mix of folks.
Unbelievable.
And it's fun to get to meet some of those folks that I've done interviews with and sat down and talked, and just some guys that you saddle up at the, you know, coffee shop or at the bar with, and they start telling you their story, and they're just, you know, you're blown away
at
what these folks have done,
yeah,
and where they came from, and where they're headed. And it's kind of a sleepy little area filled with a really goofy mix of folks.
Well, you know, in the retirement community, there's a whole bunch of NASA scientists that are here. Why they're here, I have no idea. But we have a retired jet propulsion a scientist here. We have another guy that worked with NASA on certain other things with the space shuttles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And then to bring this a little thing up back to the sound thing just for a second, another talent that is here is Alan Niven. Now, Alan Niven is, he was the manager for Guns N' Roses. And when the firefighters had their tragedy.
Yeah. Darnell.
Yes.
A year and a half ago.
That's exactly right. I got a call from a friend of mine who knows Alan and said we'd like to do a benefit concert with Slash. And Slash, of course, being the guitar player for Guns N' Roses. So ultimately, I ended up getting a phone call from Alan Niven. I mean, this guy is amazing. And he's responsible for the success of Guns N' Roses. Yeah. And so he had called Slash, who at that moment was in Canada, and asked if Slash would be willing to do the benefit concert for the families of Yarnell. And Slash instantly, without hesitation, said yes.
That was out at the rodeo grounds.
At the rodeo grounds, yeah. And so, I mean, these are the kind of little talents that we have in this community. People like
connected.
It's huge.
Fingers in a lot of pies.
And Alan Niven has got to be one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. Unbelievable. So we did the concert, and of course I get a little bit intimidated by guys that have such tremendous success like this, like Slash.
Yeah.
And so when he was coming on stage, I went up and I just had to say, I said, "Hi, Slash, my name is Ted, I'm the sound guy. I said, I just want to thank you for being here." And he reached his hand out and shook my hand. He says, "It's been a pleasure."
Yeah.
I mean, the nicest guy on the planet, you know, for the 2 seconds I talked to him.
Yeah, yeah.
But and what a nice show they put on.
Yeah.
But then... Yeah, we met a lot of people through that whole situation.
Yeah.
We did we organized all the stuff for the big benefit concert at Tim's Toyota Center, of course, which was tremendous undertaking.
Dirks Bentley?
No, it was we did all the video for Dirks Bentley, gotcha. But prior to that, when we actually had the memorial event.
Oh, yeah, when Vice President Biden came.
When Vice President Biden came.
All the dignitaries and that, yeah.
Now, okay. That is an experience of a lifetime. In my opinion.
Explain why.
Just
to recap, in about a year and a half ago.
It was a year. Yeah, that's right.
Up on Yarnell Hill, which is about 30 miles to the west of southwest of Prescott, a wildfire took the lives of 19 of our wildland firefighters.
That's exactly right.
Entrenched in the community, guys that I knew personally, Teddy knew some.
Mm-hmm.
It was the worst on-duty fire disaster as far as death of personnel in the nation's history, if I'm not mistaken. I'm probably wrong, but it was definitely the biggest tragedy we've seen here locally.
Oh, for us, for sure.
It brought the community, of course, together to support the families. It brought national and international attention to the fire service here and to our community. And the memorial you're talking about was... A week or so after the tragedy, there was a memorial service held at what was then called Tim's Toyota Center. It's now the Prescott Valley Event Center. Dignitaries from around, of course, across the state, fire representatives of fire districts and departments from around the country. There was a couple from out of country that showed. Vice President Joe Biden was in attendance. Of course, the governor and a whole slew of others. Now, for me, going in as media, it was very limited. They had the pool photographers and reporters feeding to AP and stuff, they came up from the valley. The upper rim of that arena that seats, what, 6,500?
Yes.
6,000
yes.
or so?
Yeah.
The upper rim that faces the stage, up the upper deck of the arena, was reserved for media, and it was very limited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Three local media, myself, Les Stuckenberg, the photo editor for the Daily Courier, and Tib Wiederanders, who at the time was the managing editor. I believe we were the only local media up there. I was sitting next to a guy from France, I think, from Reuters. AP was up there. It was filled with media, but I think there was only three or four of us locals that were up there. It was kind of a pool thing.
Yeah.
Secret Service checks, bag checks, all that stuff to get in. I've had to experience that before when I worked for a media in the San Francisco Bay Area. We covered some presidential events and stuff. But in the past 20 years, I haven't had to deal with that. So it was kind of a reminder. What did you guys have to do? Because I know they went in and did sweeps way early.
I think
Secret Service and things. What were you involved with in that?
I think that the reason I brought it up is to talk about this community and how this community handled it. But I'll never forget what happened. And it was on June 2nd. No, July 2nd, excuse me. The fire was on June 30th. So it was July 2nd. I got a phone call from Gary Spiker at the then called Tim's Toyota Center. And it was a conference call with him and a gentleman named Jim Brinkley from Washington. And Jim Brinkley was the head of the National Firemen's Association. Yeah. And so they're asking me questions about, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? And I'm like, I just kept saying yes, having no idea how we were going to pull this off. Not a clue. That call came in on July 2nd, and the event was on July 9th. In the meantime, we had all the 4th of July stuff in between it all. So we're booked up crazy solid. And what happened ultimately is unbelievable. The news got out that something was going to happen. And all these things that I said yes to, having no idea how we were going to pull this off.
Now you got to implement.
They started coming to me. And I don't know how. But anyway, there's a gentleman down in Phoenix. His name is Mark Cockrell that runs a sound company called OnQ Systems. He called me up. And he says, Ted, I heard that this so-and-so is going to happen. I said, yes, it is. He says, what can I do for you? I said, are you serious? He said, yes. I says, could you provide a line array system for inside Tim's Toyota Center and a line array system for outside Tim's Toyota Center? He says, you got it.
Boil that down. What is that?
Well, let's put it this way.
Simplest form possible that you can.
The simplest form possible is about $2 million worth of sound equipment for inside and about $500,000 worth of sound equipment for outside.
Because outside of the arena was where it was open to the public to come and
it was open to the
pay
public.
Their respects.
Yes.
And we had some displays out there and things.
And I said, Mark, how much are you? He says, Ted, forget about the price. I said, why? He says, Ted, let me tell you why. It's because I have a house on Granite Mountain and those guys saved my house. Anything you need, you tell me. And he did it. I do business with another company called Video Equipment Rentals down in Phoenix. They called me. They said, what can we do for you? I said, are you kidding me, Sarah? He says, whatever you need. They provided probably $500,000 worth of video gear for free.
Yeah.
Zip. High-def lighting. My friend Mitchell Peets from Desert Sky Media, he arranged to find the 56K lighting, and we got that for free. Okay, Mitchell Peets, Desert Sky Media, provided the satellite truck to communicate up into the satellites and beam down to the network stations for free. And all this stuff just started to come together. And the next thing you know, everything's going smooth as silk, and then the news comes. We think Joe Biden's coming. Oh, God, you've got to be kidding me. And nothing against Joe Biden. That's not what I mean.
A whole new mix of
issues. It just increases all the complexity of the security. So now, let's roll forward. Everything's put together. APS. I got to talk to you about APS, our local APS. They came
It's our power supply.
Our power, yeah. They came in with bucket trucks so that we could get that high-definition lighting up on the ceiling. Okay? How much? No charge. We had the Hot Shots crew from California. They all came in. All right? Now, there's no hotels anywhere to be had from here to Phoenix because of all the people that came in. So I said to these guys, I says, where are you guys sleeping anyway? Oh, we're sleeping out in the field. They slept out in the field for a week. You know? Yeah. And I mean, anything that they needed, anything we needed, they would do, including moving 1,000 chairs. Yeah. I mean, they just did it. And so we roll forward to the day of the event. And now nobody has slept for a week. Yeah. And so it's the day of the event, and I actually had to get a friend of mine to sit in the concourse area of the Tim's Toyota Center to collect names, social security numbers, and driver's licenses for anyone that was on the crew. I mean, my God, I think we had 30 people on the crew.
Yeah.
So anyway, she's collecting all that data. All that data has to go through Secret Service, and I'm like, really, really? Okay, so anyway, the day of the event, I said, okay, everybody, we got to be here at, I think it was 6:45.
Yeah.
So everybody shows up. We're on the loading dock of Tim's Toyota Center. They won't let us in. They won't let us in. Why won't they let us in? The dogs are not done sniffing the building. So I says, okay, I'm going to put it to you this way. I am about as stressed out as any human being can possibly be right at this moment. I'm talking to a Secret Service guy. I says, here's how this is going to roll. Either you're going to get us in, or there is not going to be a show. Are we very clear? Because I will walk. You know, I'm just trying to play a game with this guy so I can get in the damn building and get everything hooked up again. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, he comes running out with Jim Brinkley, the guy from Washington. Very, very nice guy. And he says, oh, no, this crew is fine. Make sure you get everybody's da-da-da-da-da. And boom, we're in and we're ready to roll. But I thought I was going to have a heart attack. First of all, Channel 12 from Phoenix was the camera pool that was inside.
Yeah.
That gets pumped out to Cox Cable. From Cox Cable, we sent it to Mitchell Pete's Desert Sky Meteor into his satellite truck, and off we go. But I guess being had I not started in the sound business, I would have never had that opportunity.
Yeah. Was that the biggest exposure, the biggest production that you've been involved with?
Oh, by far.
Yeah.
And probably never to be matched again.
Now, was it right after that they had the thing here on the square?
Okay, so shortly after that, when we did the Prescott Strong concert?
Yes, yes. Okay, was that like a week or so after that?
I don't
remember. A little longer?
I think it was like a month after.
Oh, okay.
And that was put on by Matt and Marco from Matt's Saloon. And I got to tell you, working with those guys was absolutely a dream. They're first class. And the way they organized that, it was just beautiful. I think we had 10 bands or something like that.
I was going to say, walk through what that involved for you guys, because it was. They blocked off the entire square.
Yeah.
Thousands of people showed up.
Yeah.
It was a fundraiser. Some local bands, some national. John Voight was on.
Well, that's an interesting story with what happened with John Voight. Well, how it works, evidently, is John Voight has a friend here in Prescott. The night before the show. Okay, and I can't remember days, but I think it was a Friday night, whatever.
John Voight, the actor, Midnight Cowboy, Angelina Jolie's dad.
That is absolutely correct, except that the difference is evidently John Voight is a conservative and she is a liberal. So I wonder what that dinner table is like at Thanksgiving. But anyway, so anyway, Matt calls and says, you know, we want to do this. I said, fine, no problem, we'll get it done. And so we got a video wall that video wall that was out there on the street came from Texas. And got that in there and so on and so forth. But anyway, the night before, this friend of John Voight's calls John Voight and says, you know, there's something happening in Prescott that maybe you ought to be part of. And John Voight says, what? And he says, well, they're doing a fundraiser for the firefighters. Now, evidently, John Voight is a big supporter of firefighters. And there's a history of firefighting in his family on some level, and I'm not quite clear what it is. So anyway, I got the news that John Voight might be coming in. I said, okay, that's no problem. That's fine. And so the day of the event, we're setting up the stage and everything like that. And I said, well, has anybody heard from John Voight? No, not yet. And then all of a sudden we got confirmation he is coming. And he flew his own plane in to Phoenix. And I guess somebody went down and picked him up. I can't remember who. And the next thing you know, we have John Voight here. And he's up on the stage, gave the most heartfelt speech that one could ever hear. And I mean, people were wiping their eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it was just incredible. I think that the whole message here is over the horrible tragedy that we had is to see how this community pulled together. And I'll tell you what, it was unbelievable. I've never experienced anything like it. Probably never will again.
There's some political aspects as far as, you know, finding fault and liability and things. That's neither here nor there as far as I'm concerned. You're exactly right, though. It brought the community together, If you're looking for a silver lining for a tragedy, that was what it was.
It was unbelievable.
Another thing that came about and that's still coming about from that is some of the changes in regulations and equipment and training and things to try and avoid something like this happening elsewhere. So, if you're looking for a good thing, it's, something good to come out of such a horrible event is the bringing together the community and then learning from that. And I tell you, for that, for a good portion of time after, for months after that, all the little junk that people would deal with on a day-to-day basis
All went away.
Yep,
that's exactly right.
People were nicer to each other.
Oh, yeah.
We had a little more patience with each other.
Yeah.
It was like, well, you know what? Compared to what could be happening to us right now, getting cut off on the highway is a little farther down on the list. So
it's not a big deal, man. I'll tell you what, it does put priorities into perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
And as far as the political realm, I mean, my mother ran for governor in the state of Rhode Island in 1991.
Yeah.
And she lost. Because she's not really a political person. And she was up against the incumbent guy who spent $2 million on his...
She was fighting for a cause?
Rhode Island has a tendency to be a little bit... how do I say this diplomatically?
Say it however you want.
Corrupt. Well, let me put it this way. Our mayor...
Vote early, vote often.
Our mayor of Providence, Rhode Island at the time was Buddy Cianci, and he ended up going to prison for 5 years for extortion. And so these are kind of things that bothered my mother. So she figured she'd run for governor. So so when she lost, I went up to her and I says, congratulations. God forbid you would have won. That would have been horrible.
All those skeletons coming out of the closet.
Well,
it would have been a film of you and Bozo.
Dude, let me tell you something. You think that's funny because there's three kids and we were all being followed around by black limousines. I mean, it's like so obvious. I mean, they're trying to get something on us, but at that point in the game, we're all running a straight life for that very moment. But thank God, so it's kind of funny.
But magic behind us.
We have magic.
Oh yeah, one of the local radio stations.
Yeah, yeah.
Vans driving by. Who is it? Is that Lee's in there? No,
I can't see that far. I have no idea. So anyway, but that was that experience with the Yarnell situation, and it was really quite remarkable. Yeah. But I think that, had I never gotten involved, of course, with sound, then I would have never had that opportunity.
Have that opportunity to witness that, and to partake, and to say, hey, I helped do that. Yeah, that's a great thing.
So being in this business has a great side to it where you get to meet such a diverse bunch of people.
Now that you're running sound, and now that mental faculties are unhindered by anything other than nicotine, caffeine, and butter. You started telling me, you don't have to say names if you don't want to, or you could, it doesn't matter. A few months ago, you and I were talking, and I don't remember what it was. It was at the event center, and you had just gotten done with a gig, I want to say in Scottsdale, with a band, and they... Some kind of fight had started backstage.
Oh, Lord. Jeez, my Lord. You're not going to believe
it. Give us some stories about that you were able to observe now that you're not playing, that you're running sound.
Right. So anyway, we do this gig. It's in Greasewood Flats, which is a very, very popular place just on the outskirts of Scottsdale. And they have this known band. It's some kind of a country band. I can't even tell you the name because I forgot. But... They were very, very good. And so what happened was, it's towards the end of the night. The crowd's really having a great time. The manager of the band ends up getting completely drunk. And, so one of the guys that works with me, Garrick Rawlings, he's fabulous. He's trying to find the manager so we can find out what we're supposed to do at one given moment. The next thing he's over there with the manager of the band. The manager's slosh drunk, and he ends up clocking a customer right in the face. I mean, just put him right down. Now, this is the manager of the band. We're like, what's going on here? And so the guy's down on the ground. Security comes, takes the manager of the band in back of the stage, right? And he's trying to calm them down. In the meantime, the set ends. The set's done. Okay, the night is done. What happened was the lead singer of the band was kind of sloshed too, and he just couldn't do it anymore. So they actually were supposed to play for 4 hours. They only played for about 2.5 because they got so drunk. So anyway, the band gets off the stage. The stage manager is already being held down by security in back of the stage. And then all of a sudden, everything is calm. So they let the guy, the manager, get up and everything. Now the manager gets in a fist fight with the bass player.
And I mean, his own band?
Yes. And, I mean, we're backstage. I mean, at Greasewood Flats in the dirt and the chickens and all whatever. And the next thing you know, I've seen this fist fight. And I'm saying, guys, come on. No, let them fight it out. There, they'll be all right because everybody's drunk.
It's family.
I mean, I've never seen everybody's bleeding. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, we get to see those things. And then we go on the other side of life where we do corporate events where everybody's in a suit and tie and on the best behavior. And so to see the dichotomy of the different gigs is so much fun, you know. Of course, nobody knows my history, and nor are they going to. I'm not going to tell them anything.
Yeah, nobody's listening.
Nobody's going to tell them. Nobody will know. But it's a lot of fun.
So what's coming up for Prescott Pro Sound and Ted?
What's coming up, Matt, is on January 23rd, Tim's, what we call it now, the Prescott Event Center, otherwise formerly known as Tim's Toyota Center, is the Great Gig in the Sky Pink Floyd tribute band, and they will be playing the entire Wall album. Now, for anybody that went last year to the Great Gig in the Sky show,
was
that not unbelievable? This band is unbelievable. They did the whole Dark Side of the Moon album, and, I mean, it was unbelievable. On all levels, we had surround sound. Nobody does surround sound. We did surround sound, and it was incredible. We had a guy named Jesse Henke, is an international lighting designer for live performances. He will be doing lights again this year. We will have, instead of one video screen, we'll have 3 video screens going with multimedia happening. And it's just going to be a tremendous, tremendous show.
Now, you running the board yourself that night?
Brent Reason and myself will be running sound.
We will have new photos of Teddy behind. I'll be there covering
Keep an eye on Matt's Facebook, ladies and gentlemen.
We were talking, I don't even remember if it was on mic or off, about New Year's Eve, which you worked here at the Square. It was put on also by Matt.
Yeah, that's right. They call themselves M&M Productions.
M&M Productions with Matt Saloon, the owner of that. And who else?
Matt and Marco. Yep, and they are fabulous.
Now, you had just gotten back from Rhode Island like a day or two before that, wasn't it?
2 days before, yep.
So you come in. We've got our first real snow of the year. We got a good few inches. It was cold.
Oh, yeah.
What time did you go set up on New Year's Eve?
Okay, so anyway, we packed the trucks the day before. And let's see. We got down here on site at, I think, 11 o'clock in the morning, I think.
For a show that starts at what?
8.
At 8 p.m.
Yeah.
So you're out here.
No, I'm sorry. Correction. 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock in the afternoon we got here.
So you're out here several hours before. It's a little chilly out.
Yeah. It wasn't a little chilly, Matt. It wasn't a little chilly, Matt. It was freezing.
It was okay. I was at my sitting in front of the fireplace at home.
How'd that work out for you, Matt?
It worked out great. I was asleep by 10.
How many guys did we have on the crew?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, probably somewhere around 6 or 7.
Give a shout out. Who are your main guys? Who do you got?
All right. So there's myself. And then my main guy that rigs is Garrick Rawlings. And then I had Dave Veach from D. Veach Media.
No, Dave well. He's a good guy.
Was doing our video stuff. And then I had 2 guys, Ian and Alex, that were doing road stuff and, you know, setting up and tearing down. Then I had Dave Veach's daughter, Annabelle, was pulling wires. And, that's 6. And myself, of course, that's 7. I think that's about it. 7.
And how cold did it get?
Cold,
how were your fingers?
Cold enough so at midnight I couldn't feel my fingers. Can I tell you a little interesting story that nobody knows about that gig? So anyway, the city of Prescott, they're fantastic guys, Steve Mancha and now, of course, Bill Vallely. They drive the stage down with that truck.
Yeah.
And we're placing the stage, and Matt is out there, and I'm out there, and they have this regulation where they need a fire lane, okay? Well, for years, we've been doing the fire lane. Now, if you go down Whiskey Row, you'll notice there's a couple of jet-outs where they have, like, a planter. So the rule, as we know it, is make sure you're 20 feet from every curb. So we measure it, and we've got a 20 feet.
Allow the trucks to get through if they need to.
Yeah. And so we have a new fire chief. And we were 5 minutes from 5 minutes from everything being done, and I'm talking about sound, video, lighting, the whole thing. And the fire chief came down, and evidently we've changed the way we do fire lanes. And so instead of having like a jet where you have to maybe go around a little bit of a corner, he wants a straight line.
Straight shot.
So I understand what he's saying. So we actually had to tear everything down and start over again. That added about 2.5 hours to the gig and a little bit of stress. But
how many people showed up, do you think? There's been a couple of various estimates. What do you think?
All I can tell you is that the stage was located just south of the Palace Restaurant. And just yesterday, Marco showed me a picture that was taken from the top of Jersey Lily's Saloon. And from where that stage was,
the little balcony that's out,
the balcony okay. that's up, and right from the stage right to Gurley Street was elbow to elbow.
Yeah.
So they're saying about 4,000 people.
That's what I've heard about, a little over 4,000.
It was enormous.
And what was the temperature?
I don't know.
Freezing?
No, I don't know.
numb finger Fahrenheit.
Everything was numb. Toes, fingers, you know, everything was numb. But I'll tell you what, it was a lot of fun. What happened, because it was so cold, I mean, people were probably just hanging out in the bars. So there wasn't that many people on the street at 11 o'clock. But 20 past 11, that thing just started to fill up. By midnight, yeah. It was packed. By 20 past 12, empty. You're coughing so much, you don't even smoke. I smoke. I have a reason to cough.
I was inhaling those coffee beans I was chewing earlier.
So New Year's Eve was very, very successful. Now, they had planned, of course, most people know, they were going to have a Ferris wheel out there, and they were going to have some toys, rides for kids to play with, but because of the snow, they had to cancel it due to safety reasons, which I understand, of course, and I think it was the right decision. But next year, they'll probably have the Ferris wheel. They may even have an ice skating rink. We don't know yet.
Wouldn't just use the street.
I know.
Hose it again. Bring one of those fire trucks in with a straight shot so they don't have to drive around the hose down the street, and a couple hours later, you got ice rink.
That's right. That's exactly right. So that's the story, Mr. Matt.
All right, how do they reach you? How do they? What's the Prescott Pro Sound
actually,
LLC?
Like most companies on the planet, Prescott Pro Sound has a website that's about 10 years outdated. But you can go on to Prescott Pro. Let's see, what is it? PrescottProSound@yahoo.com. I think is what it is.
That would be your email address.
www.prescottprosound.com. There it is.
Okay. I'll put some links up as well.
And then the other thing is you can contact us through there, and there's a phone number on there as well.
Okay.
And sometimes I even check it.
Well, but the best way to reach Ted is to walk down Whiskey Row, listen for some music, walk in and say, "Where's Ted?"
Yeah,
and he'll either be there or somebody will know how to reach him.
there's actually a better way to get seriously. If they want to get in touch with you, call Matt Santos. call Matt Santos at Matt Santos Photography. And he seems to know where I am all the time. But what he doesn't know is I know where he is all the time.
Yeah, right behind you with the camera.
Yeah, man. So Matt, it's been so much fun, I got to tell you. Yeah. It's up to you.
It's fun.
It's up to you. How's our time, Matt?
I don't know. I forgot to put batteries in it. I just do this because I get lonely.
Is it working? Check one, two. Check one, two. Hello, hello, hello.
We're good to go.
Hey, you know something? I got to tell you about equipment real quick. The question is, how do you choose equipment? Go ahead. Ask the question.
Ted Leonard of Prescott Pro Sound. Yes. How do you choose equipment?
Oh, it's very simple, Matt. We have a formula. It's very, very, very sophisticated formula. If the owner's manual is over a quarter of an inch in all five languages, don't buy it. And that's how we roll. Oh, yeah, we got to talk about the weight. If it weighs over 20 pounds, don't buy it.
I thought you were going to say, if the owner's not around, get it.
Hey, man, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Teddy.
Appreciate it, brother. Yeah, man.
See you around. So that was our show. That was our time with Ted Leonard. Hope you enjoyed it. He's got some great stories. An interesting man, that Teddy. So check us out wherever you find your podcasts. We hope you list us as one of your favorites. So check us out, milehighshow.com, The Mile High Show at iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and TuneIn Radio. Feel free to go on, leave us a comment, like our Facebook page, check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. We hope to become one of them.